I feel incredibly grateful to have this conversation with you, to have been able to go on this journey. I was this kid from very difficult circumstances, and I had this thesis that if I could find my way across the ocean using the power of technology, I always saw technology as my partner in some shape or form, I would be able to sit and have this very conversation today. And so I see technology as this great equalizer. I see it as class and privilege agnostic. I think it opens up limitless possibilities for all of us. And I literally went from a survivalist to a modern day, what you'd say is like industrialist. And I think it comes down to, again, my passion. I saw building companies as a form of freedom and empowerment. Investing in AI, I think it's the greatest gift I've been given in my life. It's why I'm so passionate about sharing it with everyone around me, because I have seen firsthand how it has enabled me to do things that I couldn't have done in my wildest dreams. I see it as my friend and my partner, and it's just, I feel such a sense of gratitude.
So each person has a superpower, and this is a statement that appears frequently in a lot of your media appearances. And it has also a dedicated chapter in your book. What brings you to making this statement, Alicia?
I believe superpowers, I experienced them firsthand in terms of taking my life from extreme numbers of hurdles and adversity to triumphs, having this conversation today. So from an early age, business ventures, building, they were my escape route. And I realized very early on that each of us has something very unique we can contribute to the world. And I felt that was my personal life thesis. And it was something that I wanted to write about. And I included in the book because I felt as things are changing in the world, as AI gains more leverage and things just go more and more quickly, it's more and more important for us to think about this and to be aware of what each of our superpowers are so that we can contribute that to the world. And for many of us, turn that into our livelihood.
Mm-hmm. And when you say, I mean, it's obviously quite relatable to say that everyone has something unique about them, but how does one identify that uniqueness? And I think it's a question that's asked often when you touch upon the uniqueness of a human individual. And then it's also the question, you know, how can you be sure that it is actually a uniqueness? How can you be certain that your uniqueness is not another person's uniqueness? And does that actually matter?
I think it starts with a level of honesty when it comes to yourself and saying, I really would like to discover what my superpower is. So we all get feedback from our friends, our family, our colleagues at work, where people say, you're really good at that. You should do more of that. Can be something as crazy as cooking, for example, where you hear this message over and over, and you may not necessarily want to hear this message, but take a pen and paper, use your phone, whatever, and start paying attention. Go to your parents, say, what was I really good at when I was a kid? Make a note of it. And you'll notice a pattern. Without fail, there'll be a pattern. And what I like to do is I like to create like a Venn diagram and just create like three circles, interconnected circles. And you'll be like, okay, I'm good at data, for example. That's something I'm good at. And then you'll hear something else from your friends and family, and they'll say, you're very good at music. Okay, I'm good at music. And you'll continue and you'll hear something about, oh, you're really good at communicating. Okay, so you've got a Venn diagram there where you're good at data, you're good at music, and you're good at communicating. Then you have to take a step back and say, what does that look like for me? Like, what can I do with that starting today? And it can be something as simple as starting a blog, starting a website showcasing your music, but at the same time, you're looking at the data in terms of what people around you are interested in when it comes to music, what music you can contribute to the people who are following you. And you start super simple, but you will notice without a shadow of a doubt that because you are focusing on that thing that you are really good at, more and more people will follow you. And if they're willing to follow you and you're constantly engaging with them in a way that makes sense, because in this case study, you happen to be a good communicator. So you're using the data, you're communicating, and you're giving them the music. They will follow you and they will support you and they will give you money, which is a critical part of this. And we all know that, you know, Kevin Kelly talks about 1,000 true fans. You don't need 1 million people to be your customers. You need 1,000 people, which when you think about it, is not really that difficult given that there are over 3 billion people online. So for me, it's just starting super simple and just really being truthful with yourself.
So would you then say in encouraging people to find this superpower that you're trying to encourage people to empower themselves and act on what they should essentially focus on to ensure that they are successful, that they are happy? I mean, as I mentioned, it's something that you do mention a lot. Is this part of your own narrative that you're motioning to help empower individuals?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more in all respects. I think for me, it was clearly evident from a very early age what my superpower was. And at the same time, it was very painful for me because at that time in my life, the way society was structured, the idea that pattern recognition could be a superpower, I was in denial of it. And everyone around me thought I was basically really strange. And so I went through my life noticing that I really liked to do certain things and it was just completely natural. And I would lean into those things. At the same time, I would reject them because the people around me would be saying to me like, that's weird, but they like the results. So it's an odd example, but at the same time, it proved that if I look at the trajectory of my life, I was obsessed with patterns and people could say, how did you predict that fashion trend? How did you predict that that investment would go up? So they liked the end result, but at the same time, as I say, I had to learn to embrace that superpower and get to a point where the job I do today is a lot about pattern recognition, whether as an individual or working with the AI, it's about seeing are there patterns to this and can I make a prediction where in a decade's time that prediction will be accurate. So it's been an incredibly valuable journey that I would like to share with people because I think there are many people who are very concerned about the changes taking place in the world. And instead of being fearful of it, rather seeing how can I be part of it? How can I create something wonderful for myself over the next decade?
Fascinating. So Mogadha, he said in the introduction of his interview with our guest today that today's guest is not a person you meet every day. And I would certainly have to echo this sentiment conveyed in his opening. So hi, everyone. Welcome back to Redefining AI, the tech podcast. I'm Lauren Hawker-Zaffer, your host, and my guest today is Alicia Silberg. So welcome again, Alicia. It's great to have you here on Redefining AI.
Lauren, I'm a huge fan of yours and I'm very excited to be joining you.
Great. So we started to talk a little bit about superpowers. We also mentioned that it is a dedicated chapter in your book, an important part of your message. And we can't dispute that you do have an incredibly impressive track record, both from an academic and career development perspective, as well as expressively, as we mentioned with your book. So almost seems, I would say, that there's very little that you have not yet accomplished. Some of your achievements, you've studied at Stanford, Cambridge, Harvard, you're a leading venture capitalist, a CEO and global partner of Street Global, as well as a radio host and now an author of the book Unemployable, How AI Transformed My Work and Life. So this is almost a whole conversation of its own. But I want to start with where you are now. So, I mean, we can see both physically, and I'm sure that our listeners that are listening on audio can also feel the authenticity and joy and gratitude that you have for what you are engaged in. And from what I understand as well, Alicia, this contributes to the passion that you have for building businesses. I want to find out a little bit more about your role as an AI investor in particular and start to share this with our audience.
I feel incredibly grateful to have this conversation with you, to have been able to go on this journey. I was this kid from very difficult circumstances, and I had this thesis that if I could find my way across the ocean using the power of technology, I always saw technology as my partner in some shape or form, I would be able to sit and have this very conversation today. And so I see technology as this great equalizer. I see it as class and privilege agnostic. I think it opens up limitless possibilities for all of us. And I literally went from a survivalist to a modern day, what you'd say is like industrialist. And I think it comes down to, again, my passion. I saw building companies as a form of freedom and empowerment. Investing in AI, I think it's the greatest gift I've been given in my life. It's why I'm so passionate about sharing it with everyone around me, because I have seen firsthand how it has enabled me to do things that I couldn't have done in my wildest dreams. I see it as my friend and my partner. And it's just, I feel such a sense of gratitude.
Why AI in particular? Why not robotics, biotech? I mean, maybe you're also an investor in those as well, but why AI? I mean, there's a lot of emerging technologies, as we've seen, ever developing in the landscape. Why AI?
I think biotech, you're 100% right. Like, I've got some incredible investments. I've worked hands-on with many of those portfolio companies. It's fascinating. You know, I'm a researcher by nature. Love doing the research, love helping the companies. Robotics, I've had some really cool robotics companies. And it was a joy, an absolute joy to be on those journeys. And as I say, I love robots all around me, always playing with them. And just, it's a complete indulgence for me. I think AI was the fact that I wasn't technical growing up, and I saw a world that I wanted to participate in. And at every turn, I had a limitation. I see the world as limitless, but I could see a limitation in terms of my own capabilities. And I kept seeking a solution to my own problem. And I just kept like, how do I solve this? Where can I find something that can give me the ability to fulfill my dreams? And that was how the relationship with AI developed, where it was just this natural extension of my being, where it was like, I want this. Can something out there help me? And when something didn't exist, the natural thing was, okay, let me build it myself. And it was just like, I would say like painting, where someone just like takes a canvas and they don't have to be the best artist in the world, but they feel such a sense of fulfillment. It was the same thing, where it was just like a creative outlet, but as at the same time, getting that technical help to really, and that infrastructure that I never had in my own mind to be able to do it myself. And I just could see the momentum I could gain as a result of it. Very rapidly, I could achieve things that I just couldn't achieve by myself.
Mm. And I think a lot of people are starting to see the opportunity that artificial intelligence offers in terms of the empowerment and the enhancement, the augmentation capabilities. And I think that that's probably something that you look for when you're looking for potential investments, especially in the AI ecosystem. From an experienced investor's perspective, is there a sort of standard framework that you have when you apply to potential AI investments? What do you look for when it comes to not only a good AI investment, but also a future-proof AI investment, especially with the rapid speed of the ecosystem that's been fueled a lot by generative AI?
Very good question. I would say innovation, impact, the team, of course, that deep domain knowledge. Of course, are they on the frontier of innovation? Can they make a significant positive impact? Are they super resilient? Are they a visionary team? And it's not just about backing a groundbreaking idea. There's many, many of those. But I think, are the people building it remarkable enough to make it through all this noise? Like, you guys are doing an incredible job, but it's tough going. It's really not an easy thing to do. And it takes a very special group of people to create the kind of company that in a decade or two decades time is there out there doing its thing and really adding value to its customers' lives and all stakeholders' lives that are involved in the company.
I would certainly agree. And I sometimes question the complexity that's involved of being able to identify not an individual, but a group as a visionary organization. Like, how do you classify a visionary organization? Is there certain characteristics? Is there timelines? And I mean, what would be your own definition around that?
I can give you examples from the portfolio, what I'm seeing, because that's my first-hand experience. So I'm very lucky. I started very early with AI. So I think that makes a difference before everything became so noisy. So I have some unicorns in the portfolio. And let's take two of the companies. Both were founded by founders who had difficulty in their lives, like their personal lives. So they were solving a problem from a personal pain that they could see other people were experiencing too. So for example, the one is in healthcare, and it had been very, very, very serious in terms of the founder's health. And he could see that this was a problem within the American healthcare system. And he went about trying to solve it. And they'd already had a company before that. So they'd had that domain experience. The team had both had a decade working together, and they'd gone to school together. So they were best friends. They'd lived together. You know, they had it wasn't an easy journey. And then they'd had this, you know, he'd almost died when he was a kid. So he had this like commitment to solving this problem. And so they could attract the right people because they were so obsessed with the problem they were solving. They were not out to build an AI company. Mm-hmm. They were out to solve a very serious healthcare problem. And it happened to be that AI was the best way to solve it, that humans couldn't solve it alone. And the company has grown rapidly. And, you know, doctors, physicians, everyone in the medical community is very excited because it's removing a substantial pain from their lives. But Did we all talk about it being, oh, wow, this is an exciting AI company? No, we talked about it being a serious healthcare company solving a very serious healthcare problem. And it's a very, they work extremely hard. They're very dedicated. But visionary, if you ask them, they wouldn't say they're visionaries. If you ask them, that they'd be rock solid people who have a job to do, who take their investors' capital very seriously, who take their data very seriously, who take their customers very seriously. There's nothing glamorous or exciting or indulgent about it. It's a very, very serious business that they're running.
What interests me there as well is the example that you've given in alignment with that of the intrinsic motivation that's contributed to the success of the organization. And it actually takes me back to your own story and maybe the coincidental circumstance of, I mean, you started your first business at 11 and you also grew up a few streets away from where Elon Musk grew up. Is there anything in your early life growing up in South Africa that you feel contributes to an entrepreneurial mindset and perhaps, as I've mentioned coincidentally, a passion for technology and the digital?
Absolutely. It was tough growing up in South Africa. You had to be very resourceful. You had to be very innovative. And again, I think several of us, Elon being the most famous example, saw it as a tool of empowerment, saw it as a tool of equalization. And so it was like the natural entrepreneurial spirit, I think, just flowed out of us because we saw problems around us and we saw a world that excited us and we saw a future that we wanted to build. And so it enabled, I think, myself included, to be very creative in terms of what is available to me that I can use and can I leverage it enough to build the dream that I have? And for several of us, that happens to be companies, because I believe that companies are the greatest way to make a substantial impact on society for the better.
Fascinating, sort of this circumstantial and environmental fuel. Do you feel it? And of course, we can't generalize. I mean, we're not talking about like geographical generalization or anything, but do you feel that there's more of a positive reaction to circumstances that can be challenging or more of a negative? I mean, have you experienced other individuals within your group that you've seen they've developed this entrepreneurial mindset more because of the circumstances that they have endured as a child?
I believe so. Like going back to your question about founders and visionaries, one of the questions I always ask a founder is, tell me about your childhood. Mm. And what I've noticed going back to visionary teams is there's always a connection between what a person was doing when they were a child in some shape or form. Often that arc is not as clear as people would think, but they were doing something that they were obsessed with and they wanted more of, what was something, a problem that they wanted to solve as a kid that they couldn't solve as a kid, that they went to study something, that they just became more and more obsessive about studying that thing. So when they grew up, they could fulfill that dream. But that drive, if I think of everyone around me, and I think of going back to your question about investing, that drive is fueled by something very powerful because you're building a very successful company. You know how tough it can be, whether those days where you just want to throw in the towel, you're like, this is too much. But it's that fuel that we all have to tap into to keep on going.
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, I think that what was interesting there as well is the question that I asked you was also an example of a male and a female. So yourself and Elon Musk, two very successful individuals. If we look at the investment community, not only in the investment community, but also the tech community, there's still a lot of hyper-masculinity. Do you think that men talk differently about AI to women?
Yes.
It's quite a tangent question that I feel also has a lot of relevance.
Absolutely. I also think they may talk differently, but I think it also comes down to the woman's relationship with AI. So I think where my relationship with Silicon Valley changed substantially was when I started revealing my passion for AI. So I kept it a secret for a very long time. Like no one knew how much I was actually using it. And when I started revealing to everyone, oh, you know, I actually use AI for that and for that. So for example, let's talk about communication. When I went to Silicon Valley, I didn't know how to communicate. I'd come from South Africa. I lived in the UK. And it was a very different style of communication, very, very short, you know, like one-line answers. And I'd grown up in the Commonwealth, and the Commonwealth, we have a certain style of speaking. And I would trigger people a lot. People get really annoyed with me. And I get really upset because, you know, it was my dream to go to Silicon Valley to do the stuff. And I, there were several times where I just like sobbed my heart out. I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I'm just like, everyone hates me, because it was really intense. You know, it was, people were intolerant of me and they're like, why are you doing this? Like, why? I don't understand what's in your email. I sat down one Sunday and I was like, okay, I got to fix this or I'm going home with my tail between my legs. And I thought, I'm going to use the AI. And this was, you know, this was early. It was, you know, stuff that didn't exist. And my goal was to communicate in a way where I was being authentic from my own voice, but at the same time, the person receiving the message, they were understanding where I was coming from, and I could communicate with them in a way that would be very fluid, and then receive it in a positive way, and we could keep engaging. And so the AI became like this filter, which enabled me to communicate on an ongoing basis, to be able to grow my business and to be able to adapt. And what started as a written communication thing by text, by email, eventually enabled me to speak differently, to engage differently from a voice perspective. And it changed my entire, the entire trajectory of my journey in Silicon Valley was completely different. I would have failed, and I would have failed in a very, very painful way had I not had the AI to help me. And I kept it secret for like 7 years. And I recently said to them, I was like, you do realize, they said something like, you're a really good communicator. I'm like, well, actually, on that note, you guys told me I sucked for a very long time. And well, we can only thank the AI that I'm still here, because if it wasn't for the AI, I'd be back far, far away, because this would not have worked. So that's a real life use case of women and men engaging in terms of AI. But I can, my interaction, I don't know, like we can delve deep into it. It's a very fascinating topic.
What? Why did you keep it a secret then?
Shame that I was embarrassed that I couldn't, I'd seen what I was capable of without the AI, and the idea that I was so dependent on it to enable me to actually fulfill my journey, where everyone around me, my mentors, everyone was like, are you stupid? Like, I don't understand why you're doing this stuff. And I had this very, very, very famous lawyer as a mentor. He's very successful in investing circles too. And he's a professor too. And I'd give him emails and he'd just like write F all over the emails. And he'd just be like, you're a complete loser. You're just going to fail at this. Like you're screwing up with your deals. You don't know how to communicate. And it got to a point where, as I said, I think I'm a pretty resilient person. I was like, okay, he's a chess player. I'm a chess player. This is just the game of chess. And I have to figure out how to outsmart this whole thing, because this is ridiculous. There's going to be nothing left of me. And that was the moment where I started really putting the AI to the test in terms of like legal contracts in there, where I was like, okay, he's telling me I suck. I can't go back to law school for the next 4 years. I have to find a solution right now. And that was before GPT, you know, all these things with legal agreements in it. And I started just getting like playful with it. And then he started saying like, this is interesting. This is interesting. Like, how did you? And I went from F's to A's. And this was real life. These were real legal agreements, real deals taking place, hyper speed, very fast moving markets, highly competitive deals. And I was very, very, very ashamed of the fact that I couldn't, like, now I can. Now I can do it all. Now I can talk about it. But I love it so much. Why do I have to keep it a secret?
Of course. And I think it's an honest example of how you have embraced emerging technologies to actually encourage your own personal growth. So if we're looking at maybe listeners that are dabbling in different AI technologies, they're also listening to a multitude of different narratives about AI, what would you give them as advice to encourage their own personal growth with the interplay of their own skill set and AI? Because I think that there's still that fine line of people who are a little bit cautious about becoming over dependent on AI technologies, but also seeing the multitude of enhancement and skill strengthening avenues that it does offer.
So a friend of mine, she's very curious, very successful psychiatrist, very famous psychiatrist, she started from a place of curiosity where she was intrigued enough, she'd written a book, and she wanted to know how the AI could help her. And it was simple stuff where it's not a psychiatrist, but it can provoke thinking within her that she may not. So she's got this book and she just like had questions that her colleagues and that didn't give her the answers that she really wanted. Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, I'm curious. Let me just sit with GPT and see what GPT comes up with. And she said, even though she never used any of the content from GPT, it came at it from an angle that was intriguing enough for her that it enabled her to be more creative in a way that she wouldn't have been had she not had that conversation with it. And she found that hugely beneficial. So she never became dependent on it, but she really, really appreciated that sense of thought partner effect that she got out of it. And so there's many situations like that. Yesterday, I had a call with a very successful woman's investment network. And they said, we want to scale the network. How do we scale the network? But we want to remain like a tight-knit, close-knit community. And I gave them some basic suggestions in terms of working with GPT, where they're brand new to it. They're feeling overwhelmed to some extent by everything that's out there. And I said, it's simple. Sit down with GPT and like just start by what you told me. Create custom prompts, like super, super simple, and tell GPT what you're trying to do and have a conversation and go on that journey in terms of working with it to see what you can try, what works for you, what you can test in real life, and come back to it with the feedback in terms of yes or no. And it took them from feeling completely overwhelmed, and a very, very, very smart, successful woman, but they went from being, we don't know where to begin. We're going to be left behind. And we're building this like financial education platform for, you know, sophisticated women investors. We want to understand this. It was such a simple thing, but at the same time, it enabled them to start somewhere and to go on a very interesting journey where, of course, they can reach out to someone like me and I can help guide them with all the tools and these things. But I think just starting small, just saying, like I had a young woman who, you know, is super into art, very well accomplished when it came to art. And she saw these patterns on Etsy. And she said she wants to do something on a big scale because she's like got world-class mastery when it comes to, you know, like these patterns. And I said, well, why don't you start partnering with the AI? She's like, but the AI is going to replace me. I'm like, no, the AI is not going to replace you. The AI is going to give you the kind of leverage. It can't create your designs. Those designs come from your head. And so she's gone on this journey and she's seen great success with it. So I think even when we talk about like this over-dependency, what I found very interesting coming back to my own narrative is that I got to a point on my own personal growth journey where I could switch off a lot of the AI that I was using in order to learn to communicate because I developed that muscle to such an extent where recently I was like smiling and laughing to myself. I was like, oh, wow. I don't need that anymore. Like I feel confident enough to do this on my own. And that was a huge victory. But if I hadn't done that, it was a teacher, it was a mentor for several years. If I hadn't done that, I would still be struggling to this day.
Is that what motivated you as well to write the book, Unemployable, How AI Transformed My Work and Life?
Yes. I live in two worlds. I live in the world of Silicon Valley, which I'm extraordinarily lucky to, which is bleeding edge innovation. It's very exciting. And then I live in a world where the rest of society is impacted by what we do. And often it's scary. It's scary because it's happening so fast and people don't know what to make of it. And I was the one who was always translating and saying, well, you should be excited. You should be excited. But there's only so much education I can do as a single individual. And then I thought, well, the best way to go about this is to write a book because that's a huge amount of permissionless leverage where I can free this content into the world and begin this conversation with extraordinary people like you to be able to open people's minds to the fact that there's a lot of good that comes out of the AI. There's a lot of good that comes out of this, but we have to have these conversations because otherwise people are going to wake up and be spinning because they kind of hit their heads in the sand and none of us took responsibility for helping educate them.
So I sense a tiny bit of skepticism around the lack of education offered at the moment, or?
I think I'm very lucky, as I say. I get to see my life is 24 hours a day AI. I get to see 100 companies a day. I get to see everything as it's breaking. I'm literally on the frontier and I'm extremely grateful. But at the same time, there are times where I say to people, you know, I ran this very big CEO survey and it was really interesting because I was trying to perceive where executives are and their companies are in terms of AI education. And it was a learning experience because the insights that came out, I was sharing with my network and it were like top three insights in terms of fear that people like CEOs want to know that their companies are well set up and you know, the stuff that you're very aware of. And I show it to people and they're like, you're crazy. These are esoteric problems. These are not real problems. And I'm like, no, These are real problems real people are experiencing. People are genuinely concerned about the future of their companies, and they want to make sure that they understand how AI works in order to ensure that their companies are well set up for the future. They're worried about their kids going to school, and if their kids use GPT at school, are the kids going to get into trouble? There's all these conversations that kind of everyone's just skirting around saying, well, this is okay. Like, you talk about AI ethics in it. In real life, we have to deal with this stuff. Every single day, we have to deal with this stuff. And I felt like a sense of responsibility to say, okay, we have to start somewhere. We have to meet people where they're at rather than where we want them to be, which is, okay, like, this is super cool. This is like super exciting. But you have to take people on their journey in order to have them be really excited about something.
Very much so. I 100% agree. It was one of the reasons why we motioned redefining AI. And I want to thank you for educating our listeners today, for being part of this educational conversation. It's been wonderful. We've really enjoyed having you on and getting a wealth of experience and also passion that we can really feel in your own motivation and what you're motioning. So thank you, Alisa.
Thank you, Lauren. Really loved engaging with you. Excited to do more with you.
And I'd like to thank everyone else who's listened to the episode today, and I look forward to being with you soon.